The theaters are closed, but we're just getting started. Going to the movies with Rick Devins here on Post Show Recap. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, or am I Rick Devins? Sometimes it's hard to know, but I am joined here by a man who is either Josh Wigler or Rick Devins. Which one are you?
I am Rick Devins.
Okay,
and I'm happy that you did me the favor of wearing a Wombat Nation hat.
Yes.
So that when I see you, I can tell the difference.
It's
like,
oh no,
that's
hard.
That's Josh Wigler.
It can be difficult. It can be difficult. You may remember me, Josh Wigler, as the man who hates The Edge of Extinction, and you may know Rick Devins as a man who loves The Edge of Extinction. And yet somehow in the year 2020 we are able to be friends.
Isn't that remarkable?
Isn't that what we're all striving for?
A divide, we can come together, put our differences aside, and talk about movies.
That's what we're working for. All right, so here's what's up, friends. Obviously, we are living through a time here in 2020. We are recording this podcast. In fact, on March 27th, 2020, Rick Devins and I, we are video chatting with one another for an experiment we're doing here. Let's see how you guys like this. This might be something that we can do on a recurring basis. We're pretty excited about the idea of doing some movie talk here on Post Show Recaps, which is not something that we've done a lot of recently. We're really in the TV trenches right now. But Rick had, you'd reached out to me, what, like a month ago or so, maybe a little bit more. You were like, I'm itching to do some podcasting. This is something that I'm looking to do. What can we do? We came up with like a really harebrained idea for a movie podcast that we're not quite there yet. But then the world
changed. And we had a much more harebrained idea than that to even start with.
I know.
But we know ourselves well enough to know that we were never truly going to climb that mountain.
We'll see if we reveal what that idea was at some point in time. But it was,
I'm still brainstorming on it.
I know. Can you imagine if we had tried? Three words: choose your adventure. But we'll leave it there, and perhaps we shall choose that adventure at some point. Then the world became what it is right now. Not that the world wasn't already complicated. And we decided, you know what? Let's just talk movies. Let's talk movies. Let's get into some movie discussion here. We're gonna pick a movie. Per podcast, we're going to use that as sort of like the central movie that we'll talk about on any given podcast when we go to the movies with Rick Devins here. The theaters are closed, but we are not. We are open for business here,
absolutely. Rick, I've been looking for a way to put 13 years of broadcasting experience and pair it with 6 years working at Blockbuster Video. and finally, the perfect opportunity arose. And what better way to kick off this movie podcast where we're bringing people together by talking about a movie that originally divided the nation in a dramatic way, Josh?
Yeah, so I mean, if we can bridge the gap between our opposite positions on EOE, perhaps we can help heal the rift that is very much at play in the movie we're going to talk about today, which is The Hunt. The Hunt that is now available on VOD. We will talk about that in short order. Just a couple of things up front. This is how it's going to work. We're gonna talk about the movie in a spoiler-free way at the start. We're going to give you some backstory. We're going to give you some production history. We're going to give you our reactions to the movie. Then we put out the call. We put up the wombat signal, Rick, for feedback from the listeners, from people out there. We were originally going to try and record this live. Some technical difficulties at the start of our journey here has prevented us from being able to do this live.
Josh, very kindly not mentioning that we spent at least 20 minutes trying to figure out an audio issue I was having with my new microphone.
Yeah. What was the issue in the end?
It's very technical. You know, there's so many plugs. We went through all the settings. I mean, it turns out there is an on-off switch on the microphone. Yeah. Was not aware of that.
Yeah, that's all that it was.
When the light came on, when I plugged it in, I thought we're good.
It's a great start to what we're trying to do here, Mr.
Oh,
Devins.
Boy. Like I said, 13 years broadcast experience.
The live issue is unrelated, but we will try and sort that out, because I think this would be really fun to have it be live and interactive with everybody. For this first one, we do have feedback from people who answered the call when we said we were going to be getting together to talk about The Hunt and movies in general. We have no questions about The Hunt specifically, but we have plenty of questions about movies in general and just things in general that people want to hear you talk about, Rick.
Don't worry. We'll fill them in on The Hunt. We got The Hunt covered.
We'll fill you in. So that's how it's going to work. We're going to talk about The Hunt generally. generally. Then we'll go into the feedback stuff. We'll talk about all the feedback, all the general movie things that you want to hear us nerding out about. And then after that, that's when we're going to get into the spoilers from The Hunt. So it gives you an opportunity, if you like what the, you know, what our takes are on the movie in the front half of the podcast, if you haven't seen it yet, if now it's piqued your interest and you want to go check it out, you can pause the podcast after the feedback. You can go watch the movie, then come back and listen to us talk about the movie in specifics. Or if like you're just like, I just want to hear the spoilers, you'll be able to do that too.
Yeah, just go into it.
Yeah, you know, go wild. Run.
We are letting you choose your adventure in a way.
In a way, we are. And in that way, also, we're going to let you choose your adventure. We've got our feedback form open. PotoshowRecaps.com/feedback. You can write into us. And if you've got suggestions for movies that you want to hear Rick and I talk about in terms of like anchoring this specific podcast, like what's going to be the central movie of the week, we're open to it. If there's like a great overwhelming idea that we get from feedback, we will definitely, if it piques our interest, we'll go in that route. Or if it's you guys have terrible suggestions, we'll just come up with a terrible suggestion of our own, and you'll have to hear us talk about, I don't know, like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Disney animated movie.
Oh, classic.
I've never seen it.
Never saw it. It's so. Not on a lot of top 10 lists when it comes to Disney animated movies, but Quasimodo stole our hearts.
Yeah. Are you a Quasimodo fan, or are you like a full Moto guy? Like, are you all in, or is it just like a little bit?
Yeah, I'm kind of quasi in, Quasimodo. Yeah.
In and sure. out. Halfway in, halfway out. All right. So that's.
I'm pretty casual about it.
That's the structure. On the off chance that, like, you're just wandering in here because you're, like, looking for podcasts about The Hunt, like, that's what you've Googled and you found us and you don't know who any of us are, then, man, this is already starting off on a strange note for you. I'm Josh
Wigler. But we are happy to have you.
I'm Josh Wigler, not Rick Devins, although I look like Rick Devins and Rick Devins looks like me. I am here on Post Show Recaps frequently. We mostly talk TV. We've got a weekly Lost podcast. We've got Westworld coverage. We've got so many different things. Post Show Recaps, part of the Rob Has a Podcast Network, of which I am a part. I podcast about Survivor with Rob Cesternino on a podcast called The Wiggle Room, where we listen to song parodies in a competition that's called The Wand Off. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and social media as @RoundHoward. These are my claims to fame. I work for The Hollywood Reporter. I'm very serious and professional. You will come to find this about me as you are listening to this podcast. Those are the bullet points on me. Rick Devins, who the hell are you?
I am one of the most beloved Survivor players of all time. Universally
Rick, am I risking my reputation by taking on a podcast with you because you're such a lightning rod? Am I going to lose friends over this?
Let me tell you, there are literally hundreds of people on Reddit who hate me, but millions of casual Survivor fans who are big Devin's supporters.
All right, let's get the casuals on board.
I'm a nice guy, okay?
You are a nice guy.
And that's pretty much another thing we have in common. We're not just a couple doppelgangsters. But that's what I'm best known for.
Wow.
Okay, I'm best known for my time on Survivor. I came in fourth. I was on the edge of extinction. I made some fake idols. It was a good time. I was also a morning news anchor for 13 years. Gave that up recently. Now I'm hanging at home with my kids, Jack, who's 5, Juliet, who's 2, and we also have 2 cats, Sia and Melvin, and a dog, Heidi. I mentioned my cats, Josh. I'm not, you know, trying to judge you or anything. I noticed you didn't mention either of those. I guess I should mention my wife, Becca.
Yeah, wow.
Also,
wow. Becca, getting anchoring, you know, the Devins family call-outs here.
Yes.
Hopefully so, not angering Becca.
I think we're both pretty set to talk about this thing.
Yeah,
We have bona fides.
And Rick, you also mentioned, you know, I spent several years before being a TV journalist. I covered film for a long time in the early phase of my career. So now movies are just a passion for me. But for a long time, covering movies, like going to sets, talking to actors and directors involved in film was the central piece of my gig. It's been about almost 5 years since that's been the case. And Rick, you worked at Blockbuster.
So, which is basically the exact same thing.
But I remember,
I mean, Rick, this was when people came in, they didn't have a rating system. They couldn't look at the stars. They had to come up to the blue shirt and say, what's good tonight? Because all the new releases are gone. And I would say, ooh, I have a little ditty for you.
Rick, when I met you, and I met you out in Fiji, that was first contact. You had a big honkin' Stephen King book with you that you brought to our interview, our preseason interview then.
Huge Stephen King.
You could have killed a man with that. I think we did talk about that.
Absolutely. Sleeping Beauties, actually. He wrote it with his son, Owen.
But you had said to me that you kind of got into news anchor, the news anchor line of work, by way of wanting to be in film, right? Like this is part of your lifeblood for, you know, your whole life.
Yeah. I made a lot of movies when I was in college, including a beer pong documentary that landed me my first job.
Amazing.
But yeah, I didn't want to be a broadcaster. I wanted to be a film director. And I actually graduated from Virginia Tech. I went up to New York City for like 2 weeks, stayed with one of my best friends who did not help me acclimate at all, did not do anything nice to help me out.
How much time did you spend in New York?
2 weeks.
Yes.
Only 2 weeks.
That's
and
great.
I was just scared to death. Like,
that's
I never left
time.
His apartment. He didn't take me anywhere. And I was like, I can't do it. Total wimp. And so I went back and applied to be a commercial producer at all these TV stations because I'd worked at a TV station as an editor. And that's what I ended up getting was a commercial production job. So I could like write and direct and make these little commercials. And then I just got kind of bored doing that. And I just transitioned to on-air work through my love of sports, actually. I was
a
sports anchor.
I'm sorry for your loss. I know there are no sports anymore.
Oh my gosh. I miss it so much.
Genuinely, I'm not trying to be a jerk. Like, genuinely, for everyone who's a huge sports fan, I know this is a tough time.
Yeah. Well, so, that's why
it's a tough time anyway, but yeah.
More time to watch movies.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, we're in a moment in our history where, you know, theaters are shut down. We're being highly encouraged to stay at home whenever possible. We know certainly that there are people who are in lines of work where that is not possible. And our hearts go out to you for anyone who is having to commute to work right now and everything that you've got going on. This is just a very difficult time. And I think that, you know, our ambitious ideas for the podcast, they may still be off in the future, but I think what I'm really excited about is, first of all, I just love you, man. Like you're one of my favorite, you're one of my favorite people to talk to.
Mutual, Josh.
But I know that you're a really big movie guy. And I think like giving like that weekly dose of just like talking about some stuff, is going to be comforting for people. And we want to like bring that sense of movie community, into your ears, with some people who hopefully are familiar to you. And if we're not familiar to you yet, we will become familiar to you.
And we mentioned
join with us.
You know, sports fans feeling the hurt right now, and that includes podcasts. I mean,
I know
there are a lot of podcasts that aren't going out at all, and those that are going out aren't saying much. So if you're looking for something else, if you have a friend who is, suggest this because we're gonna have a lot of fun talking movies.
Yeah.
With I think a lot of fun movies. And this one turned out to be fun.
I mean, this one turned out to, all right. So
I'll let you get us started.
So let's get into this. So we're going to talk about this movie, The Hunt. It came out on my birthday in the United Kingdom. March 11th, 2020 is when it arrived, but it was supposed to arrive a lot sooner. September 27th was original release date. This movie is coming your way. Craig Zobel is the director.
Of 2019.
Of 2019, that's right. Craig Zobel is the director. This is written by your boy and mine, Damon Lindelof, co-written by Nick Cuse, who is the son of Carlton Cuse, Damon Lindelof's partner on Lost, and Nick Cuse, who has been a great writing partner of Damon Lindelof's on a lot of the different shows that he's been doing since Lost.
Leftovers, a big contributor, yeah.
Leftovers, big contributor. He worked on Watchmen. So this is a really, really fun team of writers that I love very much. But the movie that we are choosing to start with is controversial. And the reason why it moved from September to March is because it was steeped in controversy. It's certainly possible that people are listening to this podcast and have no idea what it is, why we're talking about it, why it was steeped in controversy. Rick Devins, give us the report. Run it down for us.
All right. So first, very seriously, this movie was about to come out of September of last year. And you might remember around that time, the El Paso shooting happened and the Dayton shooting happened.
Yep.
So obviously sensitivities were very high. This is a violent movie. There's hunting. But there's also a lot of charged language in this movie. And there was a lot of charged language in the trailers leading up to it, like deplorables, like snowflakes.
The premise is essentially a bunch of like
wealthy, but we don't even know details of,
right.
of exactly who's who.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. The general idea is a bunch of conservative people are rounded up by a bunch of liberal people politically and then hunted in like a most dangerous game style. That's very charged. It's a very charged premise.
Yeah, when you just have that in black and white.
At any time of life, but certainly in today's day and age, it's obviously that you're biting off a lot with that premise.
Well, Josh, it was charged enough to get the attention of a very popular Twitter person who's also the president of the United States. and this is what Donald Trump tweeted about The Hunt, before it came out, before anyone had actually seen it. This is based on the trailer. Donald Trump, quote, "Liberal Hollywood is racist at the highest level and with great anger and hate, exclamation point. They like to call themselves elite, but they are not elite. In fact, it is often the people that they so strongly oppose that are actually the elite. The movie coming out is made in order to inflame and cause chaos. They create their own violence, and then to try to blame others, they are the true racist and are very bad for our country."
Right.
So that tweet paired with these shootings, Universal, who was
Universal
releasing
like,
the movie, said,
"Okay,
we're going to back off of this one right
slowing
now,
slowing it down.
This isn't the hill we're dying on." Yeah.
No. So the movie moved, and I don't remember if they did they put a release date on it.
No.
Right away, or it was
they
just kind
said
of unscheduled
we're pushing it
for
back,
a while. Yeah,
and did not even address when it may or may not come out.
Right. Eventually, it came back. It did hit theaters. It was in theaters for a little while, and then obviously the world changed significantly here in America. Certainly, where things started shutting down.
It is a star-crossed movie.
Yeah,
I mean, to twice be hit by things that were beyond its control is pretty remarkable.
Pretty wild, and Universal has actually put a lot of its offerings on demand. A lot of stuff that was either currently in theaters or recently in theaters. The Invisible Man, which my wife and I watched, the Elizabeth Moss movie that was out really recently, is on demand right now. Bloodshot, this Vin Diesel movie that probably should have been direct to video anyway, is on demand right now.
Was it that bad?
I haven't watched it yet, but
it's like the old Dark Horse comic or something, right?
I mean, I think it was a Valiant comic.
Valiant, okay.
I'm pretty sure it's a Rob Liefeld thing. If you know Rob Liefeld at all, who's one of the Deadpool co-creators, one of the Cable co-creators, he's the guy who can't draw feet. So he's a pretty legendary comic book artist. So I think Bloodshot is based on his work. So Universal put a lot of these movies out, and The Hunt was one of them. And I don't think that this is a movie that I would have necessarily like sought out to go see in theaters, Rick. I gotta be honest.
Would have.
Yeah.
I absolutely was looking forward to this movie. There's something to me, I get really, and I think I have this in common with Damon Lindelof, I get really into this notion of like Hunger Games style, regular-ish people being forced to hunt and kill each other. Like,
I mean, it's kind of like Survivor.
It's a lot like Survivor, which is my favorite show before I ever went on it. Yeah. And you have, you know, classic Hunger Games, which a lot of people say might have gotten its premise from the Japanese films Battle Royale that made a bunch of high school kids do this to each other. Damon Lindelof put out a movie like a year or two ago that he had written, Belko Experiment. Did you watch that
one? No, I hadn't even heard of it.
He was a co-writer, and it's basically the same premise. It's like this company makes all these employees kill each other. So he's clearly intrigued by this as well. So for whatever reason, this notion got me going anyway. And I got to say, this movie did not just recycle that theme. They really played with it. They had fun with it. And it turned out to be so much more fun than I expected, even though I don't understand all the decisions.
Then it probably has any right being. Like considering, like, I don't know. So here's what I think. Like, if you're very sensitive on this stuff, like, there's so much that you can watch right now. I don't know that you need to do this to yourself. But what I found is, first of all, I have gallows humor. Like something that's like really bleak and dark but funny. I will typically enjoy it, even especially when times are tough. I think like it for me, it acts as like kind of like a pressure valve release. of like, oh God, it could be so much worse, or oh my God, things are so terrible, I have to laugh
at it. I'm stuck indoors, but at least I'm not forced to kill everyone around me.
Right, right, right. But I think like when, like you had called it, like the black and white idea of it, like the bare bones, nuts and bolts idea of it's like, it's liberals versus conservatives in the Hunger Games is like kind of like the shorthand way of describing it. I don't think really does it justice. I think like the reputation behind it is that like this is, you know, the like Hollywood liberal elite is just like flagrantly attacking, you know, like Trump supporters. My experience with the movie, and Rick, you can tell me, and we'll talk about the movie in greater detail later on. But broadly, I think this movie is really kind of taking aim at everybody. I don't think anybody is walking away unscathed in this. I think it's really a lot about how, like, we're just living in a time where no one is capable of listening to each other. Or at least, like, people don't seem, like, people would rather shoot first and ask questions never.
Exactly. Based on Donald Trump's tweet, you think this movie is just going to make Republicans or Trump supporters just be the butt of the joke.
Like, totally villainized, and, like, the, you know, like the jaded, jilted Hillary Clinton voters are just going to be, like, the superheroes, and, like, no.
No. You realize real quickly, like,
very quickly,
okay, well, these liberals are horrible. Horrible people. And then you just, throughout the movie, you just realize, like, anyone who's on the extreme, which is everyone in this movie, one side or the other, is getting lampooned.
Yeah.
Or harpooned.
just like, getting skewered in myriad
ways. Yeah, and the main character is the only moderate. You really don't know what it is, and the only person that you root for.
Yeah. So it's
and they make some really big choices.
They do.
With, I'll just say, facial expressions.
Like, yes.
The facial expression stood out to me, and I can't explain them. I don't know why they're there or what they're supposed to do, and yet they, to me, elevated this movie so much. Because it's just like, what am I watching?
Totally, totally. And I, like, again, like, it's very violent. It's a hard R. There's lots of blood. There's lots of death.
Gory.
Very gory. I mean, it's a Blumhouse production. Jason Blum, you know, very, very heavy in the horror trenches. So it's a horror movie for sure. But I found it to be a horror movie with a big sense of humor, like you're saying, Rick. It aims really big. It is trying to. I think sometimes its political messaging isn't great. Like, I think that they're going for something that they don't like fully land. But I think that the idea that they are going for is like, we're living in extremes, and when we're living in such extremes, the ability to be productive, the ability to coexist is just impossible. That we may as well just be like throwing knives and arrows and bombs at each other.
And that would be my takeaway. Like, if you go into it looking for a political message that's right or left, I don't think you're going to find it. Like, the message is glaringly obvious, which is just like, everybody chill out.
Everybody needs to chill out before
like,
we
throw
each other.
If you're too far over there, you're too far over there. You're a problem for all of us. But one of the standout things, I think, that is obvious by the end of the movie is the main character, Crystal, is just like this terrific showcase for Betty Gilpin.
Yes.
Who we know from GLOW, one of the co-leads of GLOW on Netflix.
Are you a big fan of that?
I am a big GLOW fan. My wife and I watch it, and she's great in that, but she's nothing like this. I mean, that character's got depth. She's a mother. She's all this. I loved her in this movie.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about the characters and the actors yet, because I actually think that is a huge a huge piece of the joy of this movie for me was recognizing people and seeing the roles that they had to play in this film.
Yeah, and I have that here on my list. I am saving that for later. That's why I'm sticking only to Betty right now.
But it's got some great actors who are involved. Yeah. Emma Roberts is in this. Ike Barinholtz is in this.
Is that the guy from This Is Us?
No, the guy from This Is Us, Justin Hartley. They've got, oh my gosh.
Funny guy from Mindy Project.
Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny. So, like, it's a really, really good cast. One person whose name I really don't want to say right now because they play it as a big reveal.
Although, didn't they show that in the trailer? That really confused me.
We can get to that. I am at a point where, especially with films, I really do try to dodge the trailers now.
I do too, Josh.
Rick, are we the same guy?
If I know I'm going to see the movie, I don't watch the trailer.
Yeah.
If I need to be convinced, I watch the trailer.
Yeah. And I felt like I'm going to watch this eventually when it's on demand, and it just ended up being on demand a lot faster than I expected.
What do you think of the price tag? When
$19.99?
All these Universal and all these other companies were announcing, like, we're doing this for you because you're called inside. Like, we want to give you something. So I was thinking it was going to be like other movies on demand, like $6, not 20, but like I'm staying in a motel.
Yeah,
it was $20, which
what is a
I watched it alone, so that's like $13 more expensive than going to the movies for me down here in Georgia.
Rick, down in Georgia, how much does a ticket cost for the movies?
Matinee, it's like $7 or $8. If you go to IMAX, it's like $12.
Okay, wow.
Not matinee. That's like regular price.
Yeah.
It's pretty cheap.
Where I am in New York, the theater I like to go to is pretty expensive. So it's like, you know, like $18, $19. So the ticket price on this was fairly comparable to what I'm paying.
Oh my gosh, Becca. I have to do this for the podcast.
Yeah. So for me, this was fine. Like, this was like, okay, I'm going to the movies. It's emphasis on fine. It's not great, Rick.
When I saw that $20 price tag, I definitely snuck in my own snacks.
But I think you had to. What did you get? What did you sneak in?
I went traditional, man. I just had popcorn.
You're a popcorn guy?
Yeah.
You don't do like the salty and the sweet? You don't have like a gummy bear offset?
No. And not during the pandemic. You know, we're really trying not to double up on snacks. We want to make...
Sure, you got to ration that out.
Yeah.
Got to ration that out. My wife watched this with me. Emily Fox watched The Hunt with me.
Right.
And this is traditionally not a movie that Emily would opt to watch, but we're living in the pandemic. Things are getting weird. So we're watching stuff that normally neither of us would watch. Although I have not yet started The Tiger King. Here I got to get into The Tiger King.
I see so many things about it, but
everyone's
I'm worried
about the
if
Tiger
there's
King.
Animal cruelty, like I don't want a piece of it.
Everyone's getting in on the Tiger King, so I have not done that yet. But we watched The Hunt together, and Emily Fox was cracking up the whole time.
She liked it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably liked it more. Because, I mean, like, that Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuse combo is so great, and there's a lot of, like, Lindelof has really let his freak flag fly recently in his writing, where he's just, like, going for very weird concepts and very strange, like sardonic comedic timing that I think he really manages to hit pretty well for my sensibilities. Obviously, I've got a Lost rewatch podcast, so the guy can do no wrong. So I thought it was very funny and in line with a lot of like his recent comedy. I think of the movies of his that I've seen, pretty high on the list of my favorites.
I liked it a lot, and I gotta say, I mentioned Belko Experiment earlier because it's another one that he wrote and handed off to someone else to kind of make. And it's so similar, but misses.
Yeah.
All the places The Hunt hits, Belko Experiment. So I feel like he might have even seen it and gone, I want to do it better. I want to do it right this time. And
maybe.
It's the perfect atmosphere. I didn't know that Nick Cuse was Carlton Cuse's son. That's awesome.
Yeah. So he's I don't know if I should sell it as like he's like Damon's protege or whatever. But sort of in the way that Carlton Cuse mentored Damon Lindelof, I think Damon Lindelof has really teamed up with Nick Cuse.
Very cool.
I think that's really awesome too. I would love to pick his brain eventually. I'm hoping that I get the chance for THR. That'd be really fun. But I think Emily thought it was very funny. Was the point? Like she and I have a very similar sense of humor, so like Gallo's humor and stuff really hits with her. So if you don't have an appetite for that, you should not watch this movie.
Yeah.
If you don't like action movies, you should not watch this movie. If you do like action movies, there is like tremendous action in this movie.
I would say that if you watch the trailer
very
and
well
you think
done.
Like I would not like that movie, then you won't.
I think,
but if you watch the trailer and you go, I might like that, then I think you will.
It's likely. It's likely.
Yeah.
But it depends also, like, I do think some of the messaging is, it could have used some work. I understand what it's going for. But like, really the thing for me was just like, there are some story turns that are very surprising that really tickled me, which is why I don't want to talk about them here
up front. I know,
we're
too close to digging in. Maybe we should do other business.
Yeah, so let's do other business. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk through some feedback. We're just going to talk through movies generally here. Here we are at the movies with Rick Devins. We're going to talk through all that stuff right now. Just general movie takes from the questions that we got from from you, the listener. Hopefully we will be doing this show live. We're going to work on that for the next time that we do this. But for now, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. If you've got any questions, you can send that our way through our feedback form. You can also tweet at us. I'm at Round Howard. Rick, you're at Rick_Devins. Is that correct?
That's right. On Twitter and Instagram.
Right, right. And on Instagram, Rick Devins is at Round Howard. So if you're looking to follow Rick Devins, you should go to at Round Howard, because I forgot that I had
changed that. But if you go look at the pictures on at Round Howard, it's me over and over and over again.
Changed it. So check that out. So we'll work on getting you live video next time so you can watch along as we're doing this. But send us feedback through all those methods. Any movie question you got, we'll take it up in this space here.
We're so ready.
So we're going to talk through that stuff, and then we'll get into the spoilers from The Hunt, so stick around if you've either seen The Hunt and you want to hear all that stuff, or go watch the movie and then come back, or just like if you haven't seen it and you just want the spoilers, we'll give you the spoilers.
It's fun. We're going to have fun talking The Hunt.
All right, so this is from Scott Ring. What are your favorite animated movies of all time? Rick Devins, I saw that you were getting into it on Twitter a little bit earlier today with Survivor Island of the Idols champion Tommy Sheehan. Who listed his top 10 Pixar movies. I'll spoil Tommy's list. Toy Story at number one, a vast gulf between Toy Story at number one and the second pick, which is Monsters, Inc. In third, he had Toy Story 2. In fourth, he had Finding Nemo. In fifth, he had Coco. In sixth, he had Toy Story 4. In seventh, he had Toy Story 3 at the bottom of the Toy Stories. In eighth, he had Cars. Nine, he had Ratatouille. And 10, he had Up, and not making the list, but quote-unquote close, The Incredibles and WALL-E. Rick Devins, you seemed aggrieved by this.
Yeah, listen, for my sensibilities, The Incredibles not being listed in the top 10 Pixar movies of all time is just ridiculous.
It's a travesty.
The Incredibles is an amazing movie, and you have to put all four Toy Stories. Like, I get that Toy Story is amazing, but I don't think all four of them stand on their own above The Incredibles. I wouldn't argue if they're all four top 10, but
I agree.
But not above The Incredibles.
Toy Story 2 in third place is a very high ranking for Toy Story 2.
He's clearly got a Toy Story bias. he's looking at it as a franchise, I think, instead of his individual films. But
Toy Story 3 being the bottom ranked Toy Story, I think, is a very hot take. Almost as hot as the deathly fate that awaited Woody and friends at the end of Toy Story 3.
Maybe it's something about being colorblind has affected the way that he enjoys the films compared to us. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with excuses for Tommy.
What's your favorite animated movie? Let's not shirk the question.
Lion King.
OG or Favreau?
OG. Come on, bro.
You strike me as a Favreau question. Ridiculous?
I love John Favreau. He's so money, and he even knows it. Yeah. But no, I got to go Lion King. That was like my youth. What about you?
Favorite music number from Lion King?
It's got to be prepared to answer the question, Circle of Life, Rick. But I once used I'm Gonna Be a Mighty King to audition for a musical at my high school.
Oh my God, did you get the part?
I didn't. I got the what I got was recommended that I don't sing Simba and Zazu in the same audition.
I mean, I think that that's a good recommendation.
You know, you'll never be a king. Yeah. But yeah, so
I think it's time that you and I arranged a heart-to-heart.
Kings don't need advice from little hornbills for a start.
If this is where the monarchy is headed, count me out. Out of service, out of Africa, I wouldn't hang about.
I'm going to be the bigger the man here me. And yeah, just anyway. Stop so, this.
We're just wand offing right now.
I thought it was great. Yeah, we got a lot of talent.
Favorite animated movie of all time for me is a tough question. Once upon a time, my answer to that question would be Transformers the movie. And I'm talking about the 80s cartoon Transformers the movie. Traumatic as a young boy.
I was going to say, shocked a lot of us when it came out.
Shocked a lot of us. I don't want to spoil Transformers, the movie that's been out since the 1980s, as Rick says, too soon, but contained a deeply traumatic moment. It's where I learned about the universal greeting, Ba Weep Grana Weep Minibong, which is what you say in order to speak to anyone in any language. They understand what you're saying. So it used to be my number one. I think it probably still is. I love that movie. I think that movie
is great. Is there another one in your mind that's contending with
it? Well, just to tie it back to Pixar, maybe my hot Pixar take is that WALL-E is the best Pixar movie, and it's really not close for me.
I gotta tell you, my problem with Pixar, and maybe as a weakness as a person, like, instead of exploring my emotions and my sadness, like, I avoid sadness.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't listen to sad songs or watch This Is Us. Yeah. So some of the, like, Toy Story 3 wrecked me now that I've got kids.
Yeah. That opening from Up and is WALL-E one of the saddest things that's ever happened to me.
Oh my god.
I was watching in theaters with my wife. We weren't married yet. And like
date.
Yeah, we were deep into our relationship, but we weren't married yet. And like I was crying so hard. She's like, "Are you all right?" I was like, "You can't die before me." Yeah. You can't die before me.
Yeah, I avoid sadness so hard. Like, I'm obsessed with dogs, and if there's a dog movie, I want to see it. But I will go to the website, Does the Dog Die?
Yeah.
And like, cause I won't see if the dog dies, I don't care. Even if it's like at the very end of the, like, beautiful movie with the dog, and then I'm like, nope, we can't do it. We can't do it.
But I love WALL-E. I know WALL-E kind of, like, to some people, goes off the rails to a certain extent, like, after, like, he leaves Earth and everything. Spoiler alert on WALL-E. But I even enjoy all of that stuff. But, like, the very first, like, you know, act of WALL-E, like, the first, like, half hour or so or whatever it is, it's just one of the greatest pieces of animated filmmaking I've ever seen. I love WALL-E. I love that character. I always ascribe, like, WALL-E traits to my cats. Like, I feel like my cats are always talking to each other, like WALL-E and Eva. So of recent animated movies,
my cats are not nearly as nice to cockroaches, but other than that,
it's pretty close. This is from the great DJ LaBelle Klein. Please try to figure out the most obscure movie or most 80s movie that you both enjoy. This feels like a difficult task for us to just do on the fly, Rick, but what's like, what is, let me throw out the most obscure movie that I enjoy that I know my good buddy Shut Up Tim is a big fan of. Freaked. Have you ever seen Freaked before?
No. No. What's it about?
Freaked is about, it stars Alex Winter of Bill and Ted fame, and he plays an actor named Ricky Coogan, who is like a big Hollywood star, and he's a narcissist and a very arrogant guy, and he
was
goes
that-
on a...
Leo DiCaprio's name?
No.
From Hollywood, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
no,
was his name?
Rick Dalton?
Dalton.
Right?
Okay, sorry, Ricky Coogan. All right, go on.
So Ricky Coogan is, he's going on like a tour because he's like now being sponsored by a company, and he and his friends, one of whom is Blossom's brother from Blossom, they get...
Joey Lawrence?
The other one. Oh, the other one. That's why I didn't. I would have just said Joey Lawrence. But, and it's that, yeah, I forget the name of the guy, but he was like the oldest brother who's kind of like problem brother. and they get caught by Randy Quaid, who runs a freak show, and they get turned into freaks, and madness ensues. That's probably the most obscure movie that is like at the top of my favorite obscure movies.
Wow. I don't think
that
my obscure movie's nearly as obscure as yours. I was, when people always ask me for like an off the beat movie, if they're not like real movie people, I'm like, oh, Memento. But most people have seen Memento.
Yeah.
But I love Frailty. Have you ever seen Frailty?
Is that Bill Paxton?
Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey, like big people, but no one's seen it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think Paxton directed it.
It's a great. It's one of those movies that just like when it was over, I was just floored.
Yeah.
And I had no expectation for it.
Yeah, it's got some twists and turns that are really good.
I would not have seen it if I wasn't working at Blockbuster when it came out. But I was like, five rentals a week.
Boom. What was the best part about working at Blockbuster?
The five free rentals a week.
That's
before
amazing.
Like Netflix was a thing. And all the people there were just like other cool like pop culture nerds before, you know, Twitter was a big thing for us to connect over those things. So it's just like we just got together in person and talked about it. It was great.
John Tinkham writes in, sure, The Goonies is a great movie, of course. I'm glad that we're just accepting that as a premise.
I'm done with that.
But are you Monster Squad lovers? I can trust anyone if I know they were raised on the squad. Are you a Monster Squad guy, Rick Devins?
No.
Man, wouldn't it be great if you had said yes so that I could have said no? Because I have to say no also And it's not
I don't even know what that is.
I think this is probably going to be a movie that we'll have to watch. Monster Squad, I know, is a classic for 80s kids.
We'll have to dig into that. No, I was just obsessed with Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joes. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do Monster Squad. I feel like losing some nerd cred here. Never did Monster Squad. But, I mean, like, the blessing of that is it's out there waiting for me.
Yeah.
I don't really know. All right, write in. If we should watch Monster Squad, that could be fun. Post to recaps.com/feedback. You know, we're not held back by time or distance. Or maybe distance, social distance to some degree. But we'll watch a movie from any era if it's the right one to talk about. John Paul Roman asks, is the world ready for a remake of Air Force One? And if so, who should play the president?
I love Air Force One. Yeah. I own it on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray. Or have owned it. I don't think I still have.
I believe you have. You have select pages from the script tattooed on your body. Too,
no, that's Shawshank Redemption you're thinking of. Yeah. No, I love it, but I don't think you could remake it. I don't think you know, before it was a believable premise. Like, it was far-fetched, but you could believe that there was one president that all Americans liked. Now, I don't think that that's a premise that anyone could get behind, that there's one president that everyone could support.
Rick, are you a fan of, like, 90s Harrison Ford movies, which is definitely a genre?
90s Harrison Ford movies. Those would be the
ones
where he's,
like Clear
saving
and
the Amish kid, and he's like...
Oh, Witness. No, Witness was actually... So there's like one of the memes that's going around right now is like your COVID-19 quarantine attitude is the tagline from whatever was the box office winner on the week you were born. And mine is Witness. Is the
Harrison
Ford movie.
The 80s. Okay.
So 1985.
Well, I love Tom Clancy, and Harrison Ford will always be my Jack Ryan. So I do love all the Jack Ryan. I basically... Harrison Ford was a loved actor in my house growing up. Like, I feel like we rented movies a lot of times based on the actor, and it was always like Harrison Ford, Tom Hanks, Mel Gibson at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's it.
Yeah. I can't think of a Harrison Ford movie I don't like, and that includes Crystal Skull.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, the podcast is over at this point. Wes Dorn, I hesitate to say the great Wes Dorn, writes in and says, what are your top five Tom Cruise movies each? And I saw that you replied to Wes and said you are Tom Cruise's number one fan.
I'm not kidding. I love Tom Cruise in every movie he's ever been in. And that includes, like I will watch Night and Day with he and Cameron Diaz over and over. I love it. I think it's brilliant.
What
are your thoughts on Tom Cruise?
I love Tom Cruise. Maybe problematic fave, you know? Like, we don't know. We just don't really know.
I don't even get into that whole part of it. I'm just saying, on screen,
it's hard. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. But yeah, he's got... this man is very interested in pushing the boundaries of what may or may not kill him. He really goes for it.
I think the Mission Impossible movies are, other than Marvel, the best franchise.
I think that's a good take. I like that take too. I'm trying to think, like, is Mission Impossible 2 a bad movie? We could debate that. But if it is, it's the only Mission Impossible movie that isn't fantastic.
Right. And they really reset at 3 or 4, depending on, like, either J.J. Abrams reset it or Bird reset. I think Bird really reset it. That's when it became like every movie's going to have at least one huge stunt. It's all going to build up to that. When they were in Dubai, dude, I was loving Ghost Protocol.
What I used to do when I worked at MTV and I was on the movies team there, and I would come into work and I was having a bad day, I would be wearing a hoodie and I would put the hoodie on. And everyone knew that meant that I had initiated Ghost Protocol and I should not be talked to, because on the poster, Tom Cruise has the Ghost Protes.
And he looks awesome.
Yeah, he's in full Ghost Protes. So often you'll see me, I'm initiating Ghost Protes. For our next movie, Rick, is it an easy segue to go from The Hunt to an Ethan Hunt movie? Should we do a Mission Impossible?
It would be very easy. I own them all. big Mission Impossible fan, so I'd be
maybe
into
we'll,
it.
Maybe we'll do like a Mission Impossible rewatch.
Do you have a top five Cruise films? Because I don't think I do. Like, I always tell people that disrespect him. I'm like, go see Magnolia. Go see Tropic Thunder.
Frank
go
T.
see
D.
some
Mackey.
Of these other things.
Yeah. And I probably could still recite a bunch of it. I used to have like Jerry Maguire almost completely memorized.
Yes. So I wanted to be a sports agent for like 3 years because of that movie.
Jerry Maguire, my agent. Yeah, I know a lot of that movie. And that it's one of like the, if you know Josh Wigler, you know he's not a huge sports guy. But for some reason, Jerry Maguire is one of my all-time favorites.
So I would
say just for like nostalgia, that's my favorite Cruise movie.
And I think that's like the classic example. I feel like he was Brad Pitt without the... Brad Pitt's like him without the Scientology stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're just so good looking and they're so good in action movies, but they do so many great movies and they just don't get the same amount of credit. Brad Pitt now is, but...
I wonder what they're going to... I wonder if we're gonna get, you know, because a lot of movies, since we can't go to theaters right now, are getting pushed. And I think that some studios are trying to do this thing that Universal has done with, you know, getting things straight to VOD, you know, at like a higher price, obviously. New York prices around the world.
Yeah.
Will this become like the norm for a bunch of other movies? And the reason I think about it is because it's got me thinking about Top Gun. You know, Top Gun 2 should be coming out this summer. Is that moving? I wonder if it's already moved, in fact. I don't think it's impossible that Top Gun 2, which I think...
I know Wonder Woman was just moved. Like, anything they think is really going to make money, I think they're pushing back. So I bet they push back Top Gun.
There's an article up on Forbes right now saying Top Gun has yet to be delayed. That's currently scheduled for June 24th, 2020. And the reason I was thinking about Top Gun, in addition to the fact that we were just talking about Tom Cruise and Tom Cruise movies, is that the trailer for that, which I did see, it really is like kind of like talking about Tom Cruise's whole career of like, why are you still flying planes? Why are you still doing this? You should be at home a decorated soldier. And it's like, you should be at home an Oscar-winning actor. Why are you throwing yourself into this
stuff? Why are you jumping off a building and breaking your leg?
The Ringer did a good breakdown of that when the trailer came out over the summer last year that I remember. Worth seeking out if you haven't listened to that.
It's so true, man. Like whatever you want to say about him, like, he brings it.
Yeah.
Every time. And he doesn't have to. And I will say, when I worked as an editor at a news station in Roanoke, Virginia, he was filming War of the Worlds. And one of our big news stories one day, and it didn't go national or anything like that, it was a local story, is he ate at this local restaurant and they had one of those jars, like, help this person. And he just dropped a huge amount of money in there.
Yeah.
And with no fanfare, no cameras there, like nothing. He was just being a good dude.
Yeah.
And again, that doesn't speak to
his
whole
person.
We
don't know. We don't know. Evaluate as the...
That is one individual story.
We don't know. All right, let's start talking about The Hunt. We've got tons of questions. We can get into them in future podcasts. But that just to give you a sample of like how this will work. You know, you send in your questions. We'll talk about movies, just like kind of nerdily and generally for a while, and then we'll get back to business. And so now is the moment where if you haven't seen The Hunt, if you're interested and you want to see it, and you don't want to get spoiled, you should leave. You can follow us at Rand Howard, at Rick_Devins on our respective social medias. You can send us feedback, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. Get out of here if you don't want the spoilers. But otherwise, I think that is enough spoiler filibuster to tell you that in The Hunt, Emma Roberts just like gets shot in the face.
like right away.
Justin Hartley, who then you think is going to be the new main character, steps on a landmine and he blows up. The guy from This Is Us is toast in like a second. Ike Barinholtz seems to be the new heir apparent.
Is that the Mindy Project guy?
Yeah.
Yep,
he's
going to
be the new main guy, and then he's dead, like, very unceremoniously. And then we finally settle on Betty Gilpin.
But it was such
whiplash with the way that they were like framing this. Is you start off with sort of like that Damon Lindelof thing, right? Of like, we open on an eye, and like, it's not that like this is how the movie opens, but once like the Hunt segment of it is really starting up, you think that like, is Emma Roberts gonna be our Jack Shepherd type of character? And no, she like starts getting shot at. She goes, they almost shot me, and then her head explodes.
Bam.
It's obviously, like I said, like morbid gallows humor, but like the sense of humor of this movie, it was really up my alley for that kind of stuff.
And it was
like very risky. in a way that is not like being advertised in the advertising.
And they give you that pretty quick because they blow her head up and you're just like, at that point, you don't know yet that it's okay to for that even to be funny. It's just shocking.
Yeah.
But then when the This Is Us dude blows up,
because then he's carrying a woman, like, he's gonna be
still,
the guy.
Half of the woman is still down there, like, talking about how she's going to have pie on her birthday.
So if you're just listening for the spoilers, like, the way it works out is, like, after a couple of scenes, we like, open up in, like, this big open field, basically. Very Hunger Games style. There's, like, a crate in the middle, and it's filled with weapons, and all of these
and
people
a pig.
Come... And a pig.
They open the crate and a pig wearing clothes comes out. We find out later his name is Orwell.
Yes, yes. A lot of
total non sequitur.
The pigs are walking. There's they're rushing towards the thing. And Emma Roberts is, like, being framed as sort of the main character, and they start getting shot at. And, like, she links up with Justin Hartley, the This Is Us man, the Green Arrow before Stephen Amell was the Green Arrow. And they link up, and you think they're going to be the two main characters. And then Emma Roberts just gets shot at and killed. And then, like, the perspective, like, transitions to being in Justin Hartley's shoes for a while. He watches this woman, as you say, like, try to escape from the carnage, and she falls into a pit. And when he gets to her, he finds that she has, like, been, like, skewered on a spike within the pit. He's like, okay, let me try and save you. And he, like, pulls her off of the spike, and then they start moving, and they step on a landmine. He explodes into nothingness. He gets arsted. And she winds up on a spike again, and Ike Barinholtz shows up, and she's still alive. She's like, give me your gun. She takes care of herself. So it's just like a very vicious bloodbath right away, but presented in a very
calls him
handy,
a snowflake because he won't help her kill herself. Like, all the, like, the charge language coming out right away. But I have here, TV stars just eat it. Because even the It's Always Sunny guy, he lasts longer, but it's still only like six scenes, like very minimal.
Did you, were you a Mars Attacks guy by any chance?
When I first saw it, I did not like it at all. I was a kid, and now I love it. Now because it's like, I've seen it so many times.
I think I almost regret not saying this in the spoiler-free section, because I think, like, but maybe it would have tipped things off too much. I think that this movie has a lot in common with Mars Attacks, where Mars Attacks is, like, star-studded, much more so than The Hunt is. The Hunt is filled with, like, recognizable faces.
Right.
If not, like, you know, littered with stars, but at least recognizable people.
And the most recognizable face, I'm still not sure that she filmed half her scenes.
Like, yeah. Well, ooh, Hilary Swank?
Yeah, I'm like, was she, is that her body, or did they just have a body double?
I have no idea, but Hilary Swank is in this, and she's, like, the secret shadow bad guy. I'm sure not lost on the team that there's secret shadow bad guy of the liberal elite was named Hillary. So, like, they, like, they're really throwing it in at the wall, and, like, a very, like, the tongue is so firmly in cheek that it's almost bursting through the cheek. And so, like, sometimes I think it's really, really funny, and other times, like, I rolled my eyes a little bit, like, you guys are trying a little hard, but I at least appreciated, like, some of the comedic timing. But it's like Mars Attacks in the sense that, like, Mars Attacks is studded with so many stars, and they just get wrecked. Like, Jack Nicholson gets wrecked twice. You know, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, and then the Chihuahua and the,
Like, Pierce Brosnan and Sarah Jessica Parker get, like, beheaded, but, like, are sustained alive and their severed heads fall in love. Like, it's just a movie where, like, Glenn Close gets a chandelier drop on her as the first lady, where they're just, like, killing all of these famous people in very unceremonious fashion. And The Hunt felt like that, with, like, sort of the momentum of, like, you could never really trust that you were with a character that you were going to be with for the rest of the movie. And it's just been a while since I've seen a movie do that fairly effectively. And I did think that The Hunt was pretty effective in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. You, at the beginning, you definitely didn't know where it was going. And then, I mean, even now I look back and it's such a fun movie and it's kind of dumb, but there are cool things that still stand out. I'm like, I'm not sure that she was the wrong crystal. I'm pretty sure she's the wrong crystal. I'm pretty sure that, but I'm not sure about Dawn. Like, was Dawn a plant or was Dawn one of the, like, they leave really cool things out there. Classic Damon Lindelof, like, these unanswered questions.
The questions are
elevate it.
I think that Lindelof's like evolution as a storyteller has been embracing the idea that the questions are often better than the answers. So why try and deliver an answer unless you really have a good one?
And then to have that writing and kind of juxtapose it with writing lines like, quote, "Hey, bitch," and quote, "You effed up." It was so good.
Betty Gilpin is unbelievable in this movie.
She's so great.
She is so, so, so good in this movie. The accent is incredible. That she's like, you know, kind of like Sarah Connors-ish. She's just tremendous.
What did you think of the facial expressions? Like, that's got to be a director's decision to go there. But they were just so, they didn't fit at all. And I loved it.
Well, it's the tone of the movie is a little hard to pin down because it's a comedy in a lot of ways. Like the things that are happening are horrifying and like are lethal. But like you've got the one guy, you've got Ethan Suplee's character who's like accusing a refugee of being a crisis actor, and then it turns out he's right.
Yeah,
and then the crisis actor explodes. Like it's just
with a grenade in his
junk.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, like so it's just. It's just ridiculous.
But scene that really grasped it more than any for me is when Crystal, which is Betty Gilpin, the main character, stabs Liberty with the arrow. Yeah. It's like she makes this crazy face, then like weird choreography for the stab, and then like the sympathetic look, and then like throws her on the ground and has a talk with the Tears of the Sun guy, which I love the Tears of the Sun.
The Tears of the Sun thing was such a funny reference. That there's the people who are conducting the hunt are being have a consultant to tell them how to do all the things they need to do, and it's the stunt coordinator from Tears of the Sun. And I laughed so hard at the joke, and Emily was like, "Why are you laughing so hard?" I was like, "It's a Bruce Willis movie. This is like a real movie they're referencing." And then they go, "Yeah, it's the Bruce Willis movie."
Exactly.
In the movie.
It came out while I worked at Blockbuster, so I knew exactly what they were talking about.
I thought that was hysterical.
But
that guy, when she's like kind of interrogating him, when Crystal is interrogating, when Betty Gilpin's interrogating him. And she's going to just, like, kill him anyway. But first, like, to get him to talk more, she, like, sticks her finger in, like, the knife wound.
I'm sorry.
He's like, sorry. It's like she's not taking pleasure in it. Was really, really, really funny.
Yeah, and I loved, like, a throwaway line that I loved so much because it reminded me of why I just hated the trailer for the Jennifer Garner movie Peppermint.
Even know what that is.
That's where she like her family's killed and she goes away for like a year and comes back like the best killer in the world.
Oh,
and gets like Taken style revenge. So I love when Crystal, who just killed like 9 people, is walking away and the trainer's like, "You'll have your hands full. She's been training for 8 months."
Yeah,
like 8 months.
Yeah,
it's nothing.
I'm just like kind of intrigued by Peppermint.
Oh god, maybe we'll have to do Peppermint because I haven't seen it, but I hate the trailer so bad.
Yeah,
love the
I
fact
didn't even know it existed.
That Crystal, this main role could have been played by a man. They wouldn't have had to change a single piece of dialogue.
100%, 100%. But I think the fact that they have Betty Gilpin in it, like there are just qualities about her as an actress who's like, you know, relatively new on my radar. I watched the first season of Glow. I haven't seen beyond that. I don't really know her from
much else. She gets better and better on Glow.
She was so great in the first season. Yeah. Like she was, you know, immediately my favorite part of the show. And to see her get a showcase like this, like I want to see her in like, I mean, I want better for her than just like a Marvel movie, but I would love to see her in a Marvel movie. I would love to see her in like a superhero movie.
I'm so resentful of you saying I want better for her than a Marvel
movie. Well, no,
I think there's nothing better right now than a Marvel movie.
Look, to spoil it, post-show recaps is going to have some Marvel movie coverage in the very near future.
Oh, bring me in, baby.
So keep an ear out for that. So it's certainly, you know, I have nothing but high praise for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean it as a compliment from Betty Gilpin that I think that she's such a good actress that I hope that she starts getting recognized in work that is
can really show her range,
award worthy stuff. She's got great range. She's very funny in this. She has that scene where she's talking about the tortoise and the hare, but like she brings
the jackrabbit and
the way she talks about it is just like so loaded and like that's great writing, but she just like delivers that dialogue so well. So I just loved her in this.
No,
she was
I
such
agree.
A delight. Such a delight.
It could have been And again, you know, I think any actor who gets a main role is going to really go after it. But it's just, it's kind of a goofy movie. It's kind of a goofy role.
No, a goofy movie is a different movie.
Goof Troop,
that's
baby.
That's my favorite animated movie.
That's a good choice.
I actually never seen it.
But no, she attacks it. She takes it on, and I love it. I love it so much. And again, I love that it was written in a way that it could have been a man, but I think it's better that it was her. Now I can't imagine anyone else doing it but her. But well, she's such a Bruce Willis in Die Hard to me. Just like, it's on.
Totally. She survives the movie. What's your interest level in seeing the continued adventures of Crystal Creasy? Like, would you want to see more of her in this role?
100%.
Yeah.
100% they would have my money already. Just like Top Gun 2 already has my money.
Yeah, maybe Maverick flies up to the plane that she's on, shoots her down, she crashes on another island and has to...
And I can see this...
Battle a new group.
Maybe not, because it's been so star-crossed with its release. Like, I can't imagine that it's done that well financially, even though it couldn't have cost that much.
It was a $14 million budget, and box office, granted it was out for one weekend before things started closing down, and even then, obviously, people are getting trepidatious of theaters. Yeah. $6.5 million in box office, but we don't know what the business is on VOD at all right now.
But my reaction to it was similar to when I saw John Wick, which is, I went in for one thing, which I was going to be totally happy if it gave it to me, just like cool scenes. But I came out and it had exceeded my expectations so much, and it had given me so much more depth and so much more of a world that I was super ready for John Wick 2 and 3. And I don't think this did as good a job with that. I mean, just the fighting in John Wick is next level. But right. This definitely gave me a world that I did not expect. Like, if you took me back to Croatia, I would be into that. And again, I'm sucker for these movies. Like, I watched a whole season of Wrecked on TBS.
Oh, really?
Which was, season two or three, they're forced
you were the
to,
one.
To hunt
you were
each one. Other. Yeah. Underrated show. That show.
Sure.
That New Zealand dude, what's his face? I love it.
I have no idea, man. You're going to have to tell me.
Oh, dude. I might have to make you watch episode one of Wrecked. It's a pretty funny show.
It's a good thing that you are not allowed to be within more than 6 feet distance of me right now, because you cannot make me watch Wrecked.
Why do you hate it so bad? Just based off your perceptions?
Yeah, it's my perceptions.
It's really, I had those same perceptions. And, all right, and it exceeded expectation.
All right, people. If you're Team Devin's on Wrecked,
do at me.
Hit me up.
Do at me about Wrecked, but not until you've watched at least two episodes.
Okay. All right. Let's give it a whirl. I think the thing is that, like, by the end of this movie, she, you know, gets to the bottom of why she was selected. She goes up against Athena. I do think, like, in terms of some of, like, the messaging, like the moralizing of the movie, the idea of, like, they picked the wrong person, and, like, kind of, like, speaking to, like, the swift reaction of social media and how, like, you just, like, cancel somebody and then, like, it's over, but maybe you didn't, like, evaluate the full situation is there. I don't know if it was, like, quite as artful as what it wants to be, but I think that's clearly what it's going for. But the fact that that is all unearthed by the end of the movie and Crystal kills Athena, you know, Betty kills Hilary Swank, or at least as far as we know, I guess they could... she didn't look like mega dead. Like, they could probably bring Hilary Swank back if they wanted to.
She stabbed her. She used the blender blade that was in her stomach and then jammed her stomach into Hilary Swank.
Right.
Hard enough that good it killed Hilary Swank, but that Crystal was fine. That might be my only gripe with the whole movie. It's just like, there's clever deaths, and then there's just like, give me a break.
Yeah, so that was a lot. I loved Hilary Swank making the grilled cheese with, like, the oil splash screen. Like, just, like, the ways in which they did that
with
to, like,
Gruyere,
really, like... Yeah, like, very elite, really.
why don't people understand you need a bread knife to cut a tomato? Which I'm like, I gotta try that.
My wife being a professional cook on a chef track, I think she would testify.
Oh, really? So the bread knife is the way to go?
Good way to go. Way to go.
Thank you.
I've never tried it. And it's just my assumption.
It looked like a delicious grilled cheese. I was like, oh my God, that bread.
I love that the movie, like, in, like, the final moments, like, takes the time for her to, like, just stand there and, like, mow down the grilled cheese. It's just like, that was perfect. And then, like, how she and the flight attendant drink the champagne and the caviar.
Yeah.
The final line is like, how is it? It's effing delicious. It's just so great.
Exactly.
Really, really fun.
It's almost like the new Jurassic Park movies, it's like, uh-oh, now Crystal's getting let loose right. in the real world.
Right. Well, so I'd be curious to see, could they sequelize it? Is it worth sequelizing? Is the instinct to sequelize everything a bad one? It often is. Yeah. The sequels are rarely as good as the original. You mentioned John Wick. I think those movies are all at a really good, consistent level. But I think that that's more a rarity than the rule. Unless, like, you've got, like I think the Marvel movies, it doesn't really count because it's, that's a big, sprawling universe. It's totally different.
Right.
But I'm thinking of, like, the Taken movies. Mm-hmm. You know, and
diminishing
then, like,
Taken, returns.
Yeah, like yeah. Taken 2 is really trying to like continue like the story threads of Taken 1 also, and like no one cares about like the guy who was killed in the apartment by Liam Neeson's father
right.
being mad and wanting revenge. Plug him into a different situation. Like
more of a suspension of disbelief. It's yeah. more campy, so they could get away with it. But I do agree that it. You know,
what's the cost benefit on it?
If they threw more money at it, it's like that's not going to help a movie like this. I just like the character so much.
I love the character so much, and I love Betty Gilpin. That what I would wish for her, in addition to like getting really great dramatic work. And I believe Glow has one more season left, so her career is pretty wide open right now. I think what I'd hope for her is kind of in maybe like a better version of what happened for Liam Neeson, where now people realize that Betty Gilpin is like a bona fide action hero.
Yeah.
And so just like give us like a bunch of like Betty Gilpin action movies, like the way that we had like classic Schwarzenegger movies. Like give us a bunch of Betty Gilpin characters just in like heightened situations as she just like stabs people with blender blades.
I'd be there for that.
Very here for it.
Yeah.
Or any blade. She's a very good action hero.
She could be the next River Wild. Let's remake River Wild.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon can be back in
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. She could be the next Meryl Streep.
That's got a great cast, that movie. John C. Reilly's there.
Such a good cast for what
David
that movie
Strathairn.
Is. And, I mean, it's a great movie. It's unbelievable that
I saw The River Wild in theaters with a Power Rangers action figure in my pocket.
I saw it in theaters, but I don't think I had a Power Ranger. But it was definitely one of the more like grown-up movies I'd seen. It must be PG-13.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For us to have seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was freaky, man. I was
parents
very
took me
worried.
A lot of movies I shouldn't have seen, so it was par for the course. Put her in The River Wild. Just make a bunch of action movies with Betty Gilpin. What's my grade of The Hunt? Give Betty Gilpin all the action movies. That is like my review.
That's the takeaway.
It was very funny. The comedic timing on it was very surprising and funny, I thought. But that's like stuff I really fully expect from Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuse at this point. You know, once I realized that they were associated with the movie, I felt decent about the movie being like at least worthy of the 89-minute runtime. It's a really, easy watch.
Right,
it's quick.
Bare minimum runtime, yeah.
You know, really short. But like the thing that like surprised me more than it would have if I had stuck with Glow or if Glow was more recently on my mind is just how much I loved Betty Gilpin in this movie. She was just tremendous. I want to see so much more.
She is. And at first, you don't think she's going to show much range. But by the end of the movie, it's a surprising amount of range and yet so restrained, like super restrained. And I can't say enough about it. I really do get diehard vibes.
Yeah.
By
no,
how
I think
limited
that's a really
the vocab
good
is, by how smart. Yeah. Like, I could totally see her saying, yippee-yo, cow,
Yeah, yeah.
No doubt.
100%. 100%. Any other takes from The Hunt? Anything that stood out to you?
Just that I really am a sucker for movies where people are forced to fight and kill each other.
Yeah. Like, what does this say about
you? It's a genre that speaks to me, and I think you
what
might be right.
What is this darkness in your heart?
Survivor speaks to me for the same reason.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, so that's The Hunt. What are we going to do next? We don't know.
But
something.
We'll
do something. We don't know when. It could be soon. It could be like nearish soon. We don't know. You guys let us know. Hit us up. PostshowRecaps.com/feedback is our feedback form. Hit us up on the tweets at Rad Howard, at Rick_Devins. That's where you can find us. Let us know what you thought of the movie. Let us know what movie you'd like us to talk about next. We will keep you informed through those channels too of what we're coming up with next. Hopefully we'll be able to do this live the next time we record this podcast. If not, we will certainly put out the call for questions as well. Your friend in mind, LaRue, the great LaRue Botha, said, what's the Survivor season theme you would love to see? This is not a Survivor podcast, Rick Devins, but What would you pitch?
What's the
Survivor theme you want?
The worst Survivor theme person. A whole part of the process.
Yeah, well, we know.
Like Edge of through
Captain Edge of Extinction over here.
Going through casting and then going through pregame stuff. Like you're asked by producers over and over, like, what are your themes? And I never think about that. Like I just take Survivor as a viewer. And then I was thinking my own strategy says, so I'm the worst. I'm always like doubles, like great pairs, or like
you heard it put here
enemies.
First,
it's
folks.
Usually like MTV
Rick
challenge
Devins,
stuff.
I'm the worst. That was a quote.
So,
that was a quote.
There you put go, Reddit. I guess you were right.
Yeah. I'll put it on a shirt. At the movies with Rick Devins here on Post Show Recaps. Devins, this was the best. This was super fun.
I love talking to you, Josh. And if we can talk about a movie like The Hunt, even better.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see what we got up our sleeves for the next one. Until then, everybody, stay safe. Stay sane, stay healthy. We'll be back in touch. Take care, everybody.
Have a good one.